Does everybody have a copy? We are in part 6.
It takes discipline to be a disciple. I don't know if that's ever occurred to you before, but the word disciple is in the longer word discipline.
When I talk about discipline today, I'm not going to be talking about
child management. Teachers sometimes talk about it that way. How do you keep things under control in the classroom? They have little tips that they give to one another. Just little things. If a child is chatty, maybe they'll walk up to him, just put their hand on the child's shoulder at first to be a little bit of a signal. And then the next time, probably something will be said about it. And then maybe some consequences will come later on.
That's not what I'm talking about in this lesson today.
What I'm going to be talking about is self-discipline, self-control.
How do we build it into our children? We got as far last time as the top of the second page, on the back of the front sheet.
I have 6 points in this chapter, and each one has a little arrow next to it.
The first one that I'd like to emphasize is teach your children delayed gratification.
We really have our work cut out for us when it comes to that, living in the world that we do, right? Because everything in our world is instant gratification, right? So we as parents know we have to buck the tide when it comes to this, right? The advice that I give under this point is this. The older they get, the longer they can go before receiving a, I put it in quotation marks, reward for good behavior. Because I don't think you should treat your children like show dog or something where, you know, when they perform well, you slip them a little treat every time. But I'm talking about things like privileges, right? If you accomplish such and such task, you will get this privilege. And the point I'm making here is that as your child grows older, it becomes more and more important to move those privileges farther and farther in the future. Let them begin to manage their time, and then when the larger task is accomplished, have that, I'll use the word reward again, waiting for them at the end. But as they grow up, space it out more and more, put it more and more toward the future.
And then I say the ultimate goal is to give no reward at all, but to help your children learn that good behavior is its own reward.
Help them to see that the self-controlled life, the self-disciplined life, is a happy life, right? So that you don't have to be giving orders on an hourly or even minutely basis, right? But you can spread it out, maybe for days or weeks.
I chose a little scripture there to get us thinking about this.
It really struck me, I think it was last Sunday, this was part of the gospel reading,
where Jesus was talking to his disciples and he said,
looking at his disciples, Jesus said, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you," and in verse 21, and I really want to zero in on, "Blessed are you who hunger now." I think that little word there is very important. "Who hunger now, for you will be satisfied." Do you see delayed gratification in that little phrase? Teaching children to be satisfied with nothing for a while, with the goal that sometime in the future you will be satisfied. Or the second one is the same. "Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh." Since when does every moment of the day have to be giddy? Since advertising started, right? Children don't know how to cope with different emotions anymore today, I'm convinced. Because everything that's given them, they are told, they are reinforced by our society, by television, that everything should be exhilarating, right? Everything should be exciting that happens to me. That's not life, is it? You and I know that there are many moments of sadness, like the day we're having today, but we know that the Lord promises there will also be days when we will laugh, right? As the vicar, or maybe it was one of the teachers at chapel, was reading this gospel, that phrase really jumped out at me, because I was planning my lesson on discipline, and I thought, oh, Jesus captures it right there. And then 22 says, blessed are you when men hate you, when they exclude you and insult you and reject your name as evil because of the Son of Man. Jesus, of course, there is talking about persecution that his disciples will sometimes have because of their faith. But I think we could maybe view this one in a little bit different way too. Teaching our children to cope with people who don't like them. I think unrealistic expectation that children have today is that everybody's going to be their friend, right? And that just isn't really true in life either, right? Becoming an adult, we all have to learn the lesson. There are certain people who don't mesh with us as far as likes and dislikes, right? Many of these passages that I chose today don't have a direct bearing on what we're going to discuss, but they simply illustrate the point that I'm trying to make. Does anybody have any questions about delayed gratification? Excuse me. Or maybe even something that you've developed with your own children to teach delayed gratification. Has anybody discovered something that they'd like to share with the class? Sherry.
Amy's having a problem with talking back. Really mean. Mm-hmm. And it was the tone of voice that she used instead of the words. Mm-hmm. And she wanted this CD. She was starting to learn Janet on the piano. It was a Mahalia Jackson CD. It was $35, so that was kind of expensive. Mm-hmm. So what we did was, every time she started to kind of veer off into the snotty kind of attitude, mm-hmm. and say, Mahalia Jackson, and she'd stop and go back. And we did it for about a month. And
a whole month?
Yeah.
And she, at what age was she at the time?
This was last year, so she was about 7.5 or 8. Okay. And then kind of helped her develop that little bit of self-control over what she was saying and how she was saying. Mm-hmm. And she had to wait that whole month. And her, as her behavior got better, she got her reward at the end of the month that she got.
Words can help, key words, right? I mean, some parents use the system with calm, telling them to count when they feel like they're going to get angry. Just tell them to stop and count, and then they, by that time, by the time you get to 10 or whatever the number is, you know, they've calmed down a little bit. Or I think Michelle had shared one with us earlier, right, about the two jars with the buttons. The one about, what was it again?
I don't think I want any buttons.
Chips or something where it wasn't directly, you weren't directly teaching delayed gratification, but it made you think you could develop delayed gratification that way. I can't remember what
it might have been.
I'm foggy getting it. Yeah, probably was the other Michelle.
That's my other twin. Here on the other side.
Anyone else on delayed gratification? Jim?
Something similar that I use tickets. My son, him and I sat down and we put together a list of things that he needs to concentrate on, what mm-hmm. he needs to improve on, where mm-hmm. he needs to be on the best behavior or at least on acceptable behavior. Mm-hmm. And just by doing that at the end of the day, him and I went over this list. He made these things up. He knows where it is and he slips and mm-hmm. needs to pay more attention to things in school, church, whatever. Mm-hmm. He'll receive a certain number of tickets each day. At the same time, you make a list of things he needs to improve on and wants to watch the behavior at. We put together a list of rewards. So it takes a while before he actually can say, oh, enough these tickets to get one of these rewards. They're not purchased items, things he'll buy. They're things he wants to do with me. Whether it be gone by a ride or go visit a friend.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Things like this.
Yeah.
It seems to have begun to help. It's his behavior use a perfect arrangement sitting in service today, where a lot of times it's just jumping all around. Because today, he gets to use one of his rewards too. One of maybe part of the inspiration for it. It's a little bit of a friend that was.
I like your specific type of rewards, because I think there is a danger with rewards, right? To begin with, according to what the Bible teaches, rewards are law motivation, right? They're building up points, and we would never want to give our children the idea that we're building up brownie points with God, that make us right with God or anything like that. But I think at a certain age, when children are still quite small, you almost have to use them because they can't measure time or being able to hold out good behavior for long periods of time unless there's something promised in the end.
The E word, like I said, make a comment with a route, really practice, whatever, remember your tickets. The E word there.
That they instantly can identify with, that means I need to behave. I need to stop what I'm doing right now. Michelle?
One distinction that Mark and I learned when we took the Growing Kids God's Way class is the difference between a bribe and a reward.
No.
Bribe is, let's say you go to the grocery store and say, honey, if you're good at the end, you'll get this.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bribe.
Yeah.
They know what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
So the only reason, of course, like you were saying, that they would do the good behaviors to get the bribe is what it is.
Yeah.
A reward is they're good at the grocery store, and at the end you say, honey, you were so good. Well, I really appreciated your good behavior. You did this, this, and this, being specific. I'm going to get you this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is
then it's spontaneous on your part. They're not knowledgeable about it ahead of time. Yeah, we were discussing the same topic in staff meeting on Wednesday morning, and Cindy Holman was saying that she uses one of her rules in her classroom is if you ask for a treat, you don't get one. But if you don't ask and you do something nice, you'll get a treat. She determines what the treats are. Yeah. Good point. Okay, anything else on delayed gratification? Let's go on to the next one then. Teach responsibility by giving your children regular household chores. Some of my advice today is going to sound downright folksy. It's not going to sound very scientific or what you hear from a child psychologist. It's just common sense that I'm going to be giving you, okay? And, of course, you can guess where this one comes from in my past. Teach responsibility by giving your children regular household chores. We had a milk ghost house 365 days a year. And we always milked after supper. We called it supper, not dinner. And we would always complain after supper. Oh, I have to go to the barn, I have to milk those cows. And my father would always quote the passage that I put down here for you. 2 Corinthians 3, verse 10. For even when we were with you, we gave you this rule. And this is the part he always quoted. If a man will not work, neither shall he eat. And he had just eaten. It was too late. The work was going to come too. The thing I regret for my children more than anything is that I can't give them an environment where everything is linked to the work that they do. That was one of the most valuable lessons I learned when I was growing up. You planted the seeds in the ground, you watched them grow. I remember one of the things really occurring to me was, boy, I don't do much with those seeds. I mean, I have to hoe them every once in a while. Maybe I put some fertilizer on. But most of the time, God's doing it and making it grow. And at the end of the harvest period, or the growing period, then I harvest them, and wow, it's like he just gave it to me, right? But I got to do some work to get it too. Inasmuch as you can, create an environment in your house where the chores are connected with the food that you eat, the clothes that you wear, things like dishes. We started our kids on dishes, I think, when they were 5. At that stage, they like to do it because they're in the helping mommy and daddy stage. You'll probably turn me in for, what do they call that? Not child abuse, but
labor laws.
Labor laws and stuff. maybe even danger, you might say. Both of them started mowing lawn at 7. I mean, I was there with them the first few times. You know, they were in front of me, and I had my hands on the lawnmower. But gradually weaned them from that to where I would just stand and watch them do the lawn. Connect the things that need to be done in your house with the income in your house. Okay? In whatever way that you can. My advice underneath that one is help them to see that they have a valuable role to play in the running of your household so that they can someday set up a stable household of their own. Okay? I think there's too many kids growing up today who never learn how to vacuum, never learn how to dust. It's the common sense things, right? They are going to need this skill later. Karen Martin is with us today. She's sometimes here in this class. She would tell a story. She worked for one of the social services agencies of the state for a long period of time. She worked with mothers who did not know how to vacuum. She had to take the vacuum out and show them how it worked. She was just aghast. Children need to be learning these tasks from little on. They need to be connected with the well-being of the family. And they want to feel valuable in the house, right? You give them these tasks and they feel like mommy and daddy, right? It's a need that they have. So give it to them. Michelle.
This is similar along those lines. As last year, the boys came to us saying, because we have not given them any allowance, they wanted money to buy stuff or to do things. And everything I tried to think of was already assured that they should do as being part of the family. So we were really struggling with, what can they do? You know, they should wash the car because they ride in the car. So we were having difficulty. And one day, it was just kind of all of us working on putting our heads together is, the boys go around the neighborhood with us and they collect cans, aluminum cans, and they recycle those cans. And with that money that they put in together, we've gone to the water park or, you know, other things like that. But they had to work because they have, you know, I made up these little door hangers. And so we went to our neighbor's doors and they had to knock on the door and they had to use polite words and say, this is what we're doing. And and so they had to work. And, you know, of course, partway through, Wesley's like, this is hard work. And it's like, well, you know what? You don't have to do this.
Yeah.
AJ can
this is the above and beyond stuff.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And AJ can have all the money, and he can have all the things that go with that. Okay. So, you know, and they've done quite well over the last year.
My mother had a knack for finding extra jobs. The part of the country that we lived in, we would get a few migrant workers, not a lot, but they normally picked cucumbers. For some reason, a lot of cucumbers were grown in our area. So my mother saw to it that we also had a cucumber field, which was above and beyond the regular farm duties, which were connected with your food, that sort of thing. And that was something that was our extra money. And it was a good task in that we then took them to market and watched them grate pickles. I don't know if you've ever seen how they do it. They put it in a shaker machine and then the little pickles fall out in this bag here. And the little pickles are the valuable ones, but you have to pick hundreds of them in order to get, you know, $1 worth. And the big ones are worth practically nothing. I think they were worth something like 7 cents a pound. And they get so big that one of them would be a pound, you know. So then that taught you needed to pick on a regular basis so that the cucumbers didn't get so big that they weren't worth anything. So you learned the economics of something like food growing too. And that was just the extra stuff above and beyond the farm chores. Jerry.
You know, you're right. My dad had his own business, and we had to work his business from the time we were 5. And he delivered milk. I mean, he had his own company. And so I can remember I got a driver's license. I was driving stuff to accounts. I learned how to call on the grocery stores and the accounts. My brother does what they do. They got the jobs. I'm in sales, and we were taught how to treat customers, and that's what I do for a living. And I got that for my kids. So I started taking my kids with me to work. When they're off, sometimes have to be honest with me on my route.
Great.
And up to Tahoe and Carson City and Minden, he's like, oh, this is terrible. Why? That I knew would be really kind, and the ones I didn't think they would get it, because they're mostly men, you know, they don't think about things like that. I lived up in the car, you know, but it was a really good experience for both my kids, and they don't like to go yet. You want to go with me? No. At least they know now how tired maybe I am when I get home.
Yes.
From driving.
Yes. How mom feels at the end of the day, right?
So it was a good thing, but I want them to learn the value of having a mom customer and how to. Do that, because that's how I learned what I do for a living.
That is such a valuable skill in today's world, right?
Well,
knowing how to treat a customer.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I would just encourage parents, you know, when you just have boys or girls, everybody kind of does everything between half boys and girls. Girls sometimes tend to do the girl jobs, the domestic jobs.
Mm-hmm.
The boys get to do the male kind of jobs. When I was growing up, I did the cleaning and the dishes every night, mm-hmm. and the boys mowed the lawn once a week. And then my younger brother had allergies, so whenever his allergies picked up, they got to mow once.
Yeah, you got to do that.
And he never had to trade off and do any of my jobs. And so I grew up knowing how to do everything. And they grew up kind of like, you know, they kind of had to learn it when they got into their late teens and 20s, when they kind of were doing more stuff independently. Well, I know how to do laundry and do everything.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I grew up too in a totally integrated household where boys and girls went to the barn and milked cows. As a matter of fact, I remember one time my sister and I milking for somebody else, and the farmer was just amazed. A girl milking? Why? Right? And it was the same way. The boys had to dust, vacuum. Yeah. Very important to learn in today's world.
What about the argument that I hear sometimes about the regular allowance for the regular kinds of chores versus extra money for something above and beyond? Because we struggle with that sometimes, especially if, you know, the boys both know how to vacuum real well, help with dishes and things like that. And then they say, you know, hey, you know, I, how can I earn $10 for whatever? They have a question.
I advocated this in an earlier class, and I'll do it again. I really advocate making your children do household chores and not attaching it to any money. That they have a sense of, I'm part of this household, this is what I do. And then making an allowance, something that the parents simply give. And I would do it kind of like Michelle did too, where there's not strings attached to it. And maybe not always every week, but when mom and dad feel it's time to give something, that teaches grace. That everything we have is a gift of God's grace.
Okay, good.
Now you could do it the other way too. And you could even have a tiered system, I would say, where, you know, there's certain things that are expected of everybody in the house, and then have the things like Michelle is saying, where it's the extra money that I do this task for. So I think you could do both. Sherry?
We've read a book called Your Money Happiness. There's a chapter about teaching your children about money. Mm-hmm. And he says the same thing. Give them a set amount. That's the money they get all the time, no matter what. They don't do a specific job. Children go to school. They're expected to participate in household chores. Have a set number of household chores. And this is your job because you're a participant in this family.
Yeah.
And so my kids get $5 a week. When they go and they're invited to a birthday party, like a roller skating party, and they want to get the glow sticks, you need to use your money.
Yeah.
And they're also trained that after they started receiving their offering envelopes, they're very excited about using their own money.
Yeah.
And they put their money in there, and I mean, they're giving out of their $5, about $2 out of the week, and they're excited to get it. And that makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then when they want to earn extra money, it's 25 cents.
And those are the optional ones.
Yeah, and
then
the ones that you can do, extra.
So. Since this is our last class, I'm sorry to cut off discussion, but I would like to go on to the next one, okay, so that we get through this lesson today. The third arrow is teach your children, teach your children early how to manage money. In Jesus' parable of the talents, The master said to the two servants who wisely used the money entrusted to them, let me review the parable of the talents for you. Back in Jesus' day, talent did not mean the thing you were good at or the gift from God. It was a type of money. I think the Bible is why it kind of went over into the, you know, what I'm good at, my gifts, my, because of this parable. But the parable really is talking about money. Talents were the largest denomination of money. And the first, there were three servants in the parable. One received five talents from the master. One received, was it three or two? I can't remember. And one only received one talent. That's right. He tells two parables like it. One is called the mina, and I'm getting it mixed up. The talent one, Michelle is right, it's 10. The first one received 10 talents, the next one received 5 talents, and the last one received 1 talent. Talents were very large. It was in the thousands of dollars that they received. The first two men who received talents invested their talents and doubled their money, both of them. The guy who got 10 talents from the master made 10 more on his investment. The one who received 5 talents made 5 more talents on his investment. But the final servant only went away and buried his talent in the ground until the master came back. Because that was part of the story of the parable, that the master was going to come back and wanted the money back. And he gives the one talent back to the master, and the master chides him. Why didn't you at least put it in the bank? So they got a little bit of interest. But these are the words that he says to the other two servants. Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Part of the reason I copy down this particular verse is because I feel strongly that money is one of the small gifts of life. In our world, we make far too much of money. Money actually is something that kids can begin to manage at a rather young age. And if they learn how to manage money, they will learn how to manage other things. Their toys, their clothes, and then branching out to the more abstract things like the gifts that God has built into them, what we today call their talents. If we can get them to use money properly, they'll learn to use all these other gifts of God in a wise way. So I would recommend really simple things. If you haven't started yet, start a bank account for your children, a savings account, where they can watch it from month to month. Teach the importance of money simply by buying them a wallet. I can remember one of the lessons I learned. We had an uncle and aunt who lived in Chicago. We would go see them once a year, and they actually had malls there. Never heard of such a thing in Petrie. So we loved to go to the mall with Aunt Jen, and we would take our wallet along, and I can remember taking mine out of my pocket while we were on the way back to her house and laying it on the seat and completely forgetting about it. And so, of course, the lesson that was learned, I'm sure Aunt Jen saw it or Mom saw it, but they said to one another, "No, nobody says anything about it. We've warned him. He needs to take care of money. Get back home. No money. Where could my money be?" And of course, I didn't get it then until the next time. It was probably a year later, or maybe Aunt Jen came 6 months later, when the wallet came. Those weren't created yet in the Stone Age.
Like cell phones and emergencies where you can come across and go grab it, right? Taught a valuable lesson, I suspect.
Yeah. Any hints that any of you have about money? How to teach children to manage money?
Well,
Jerry?
I have two opposites. One is a manage money well and will keep it forever. It's always in his wallet and he has a bank account. And the other one burns a hole in the pocket as fast as he can. And then you're using the same tactics, but the other one just cannot hold on to that money. He spends it. Even when I said, why you, like my dad sends money for Christmas or he gets money for whatever, he just spent it right the next day. And I'm like, but you don't want anything. I might have something I need at the mall. And I'm like, well, you know, and it's gone. You know, it's, you know, you won't have any more. Whereas, first of all, hold on, I don't have money. If you, you need some money today for school, for like a drink, no, I have money. He has money all the time. So is my wife, he never spends it.
Funny how it works that way. Holden's always said that about their kids too, that the one spent it and the other one
spent it. But I try to teach him the value of money. That Alex is trying. See, then when I was giving the allowance, when they wanted Jamba Juice or Coke or whatever, he wouldn't want to spend some money for that. No, he wouldn't. He'd spend it on anything else for himself.
Yeah, and something like Jamba Juice, that's above and beyond, right? So that's one that I would say he should be spending.
He has money, but I mean, like I said, he never has it because he blows it off.
Two tactics you could use with that one, treat them both the same and let the spender learn from the saver that the saver's always got money. You know, what do I have to do to change my wallet? Or another tactic that you could use is treat them totally separate and maybe have more control over the one that has no control and make it clear that there's no spending of the money unless we agree on what it's going to be spent on. No going to a store and spending money unless I'm there at the time, putting more restrictions on that child. Marcia?
One of my sisters had suggested, for example, if you got $5 that you gave to your child, $1 automatically goes to church, $2 goes into the savings account, $2 goes to whatever that child wants to spend it on. So at least it's split up three different ways.
Yes.
I'm kind of curious to get input from you guys on how to do it.
Any input on that one?
We've tried a similar approach with the boys, and the girls for that matter, the same. One is saver, one is spender. Boys are the same way. We're still struggling sometimes for that mark. We'll sock it away and for that delayed gratification. Nathan will see a pair of sneakers in a catalog and salivate until he, you know, gets them. And then we've used a little bit of the reality discipline, I guess you could call it, afterwards. When Mark's able to go do whatever he wants with a friend, let's say, that's going to cost $20 to get in. And Nathan's kind of going, oh, what am I saying? Look at those shoes, you know? That's where the money is.
How about that occurred to me if I would use something like Marcia was talking about? Maybe what I would do is also have the child keep track of what was purchased with their $2 and what was saved, and at the end of a year or something, look at the list, compare the list once. You know, how valuable was the video or what stuff, and you know, whatever was on the list, and then compare it to the save item. And if it comes up, you know, to $100 or something like that, you know, you know, that could teach a lesson. Pam?
I think that's an excellent idea, because that was something, my mom is really good with money, really good with numbers and figures, and I remember several years ago, she came and my checkbook was totally out of whack, and I, you know, said, you know, here's something you can do if you want to, because she was looking for something to do, and she sat down and she said, well, let me teach you again how to do your checkbook, and I'm going, I don't want to know, I know how to do this, right?
Yes.
And show them when they have money coming in how to do it. Or do it like on Excel on your computer. Make a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the year, especially for kids in, you know, fourth, fifth grade, at the end of the year you can say, okay, here's how much you spent on toys, you know, here's how much you spent on this. So that from a little age on, it's just ingrained how to do that. But as much as you get to be my age, you get pretty stubborn as to, no, I really don't even want to see what I do with my
Yeah, too depressing, right? I haven't done it yet, but I'm considering having Sam balance my checkbook because of learning at, you know, big addition and subtraction. It's something they're working on right now. So just, it's not going to take any more time on my schedule because I do it anyway. But simply say to him, okay, Sam, we're going to have life application of addition and subtraction. Let's see how you do. We'll check it with the calculator after you're done doing it the longhand way. That way, too, I think he would get to see what are the big bills that come in each month, so that he's not blown away later on by a mortgage payment is, you know, hundreds of dollars. Sherry?
There's a website, I think it's called juniorsavers.com. My girlfriend uses it for daughter's 12. Uh-huh. And it has a little printout thing. You can make your own little fake checks and it has a fake register. Mm-hmm. And you print it out, and every time you want to spend money, you have to write a check out. Mm-hmm. And then subtract it so that the child knows how much they're taking out before they do it, before they go and spend the money. Mm-hmm. And then she has to figure out how much tax is going to be involved, the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. So she can track it for money.
What's the name of that one again?
I think it's juniorsavers.com.
JuniorSavers.com. Yes.
Yo. You don't give Patrick money per se. He gets it on his birthday or Christmas. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we make him figure out what 5% of that is, whatever the total is.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the first thing he does is he goes and puts the rest in the bank, so he gets used to paying himself first. And then he goes and gets the spend of the
Yeah, and that teaches things like multiplication, right? Where if you do it that way, you know, the 0.5 or 0.05, I guess it would be times the sum. Yeah. Make them do all the legwork on it. Joyce.
We haven't done it yet. We thought about, you know, if they put money into a savings account, not just having their interest that they earn on that. Maybe if they leave it in for a certain length of time, we would give them a percentage more or whatever too, so that.
That might be a way of doing it too. To make it more dramatic, because they're just with small sums.
Yeah, so that's an idea.
There's one thing that I did, Pastor. My stepdaughter was in high school, she got a job, which so many high school kids get jobs now. Mm-hmm. And she was thinking, woohoo, you know, it's money to do. $200-$300, a lot of money. I would let her keep it. I had her give it all to me, except for she got to keep enough to run the car that she had in the extra money. And she was really mad at me. I said, well, you don't need all that money. You have nothing to do with all that money. A lot of people, their kids work and they get to keep all this money.
Yeah.
And so when she was down at high school and went to college, and I gave it all back. Mm-hmm. It was all her money, but I saved it for her. I just think that for high school kids, that's a lot of money that so many kids are earning now at that wage. And they just spend it on CDs. And
exactly.
And it's a lot of money.
It goes along with our teaching delayed gratification, right? There should be this idea of a college fund or whatever it happens to be that the money goes into. Craig?
Yeah, we've always given our kids, you know, the allowance without any strings. Mm-hmm. And my oldest one, though, we've stopped giving, he's 13 now, we've stopped giving him this allowance and want him to earn it with extra things. Mm-hmm. And so we've made him come up with these extra things, and when he does them, I pay him the check. So he has to go down to his bank account and deposit it and figure all that out.
Yeah.
And it's been going a little rough, but.
Well, that teaches them to go through all the steps, right, that are necessary with managing money. Yeah.
I had an idea when you were talking before about, you know, how to use the money. It's like when you go to the grocery store, sit down with your child and help them, you know, have them help you make out the grocery list. Charge of the money, say a figures, you know, $100.
Yeah.
This is the stuff we need to get and help, you know, figure out how we're going to get all the things that we need for tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then we'll see that, you know, the extra pop cards or whatever, you know, you can't afford if you can't get all this.
Pam is making me think of, I don't know how many of you attended the financial seminar that Pastor Mitchell put on within this past year, but he uses the envelope system where at the beginning of each pay period, he apportions, this is for himself, and this is just advice for you as a parent, where he puts, he labels each of the envelopes food, clothing, whatever, and then when that envelope is empty, you can't buy any more of that particular thing. It helps you to become self-disciplined in what you're spending money on. And it really is the antidote for credit cards, right? I think we all have the problem of it's so easy to put it on that credit card, but then it's so hard to pay that huge bill at the end of the month, right? Sherry?
There's a really good book called The Taiwan Gazette. And this
And she is good. I mean, it's like 900 pages of ideas. She used to have a Gazette thing that she sent out every month. People would send in their ideas. And I mean, she's got some really off the wall ideas, but she's got some really good stuff. And her theory is challenge yourself every month to not spend that money. Challenge yourself, you know, if you spent $25 per month, well, see if you can only spend $20 the next.
Yeah.
And I mean, she's got six kids and they feed a family of eight on She has a beautiful farmhouse that she's completely redone with things that have been salvaged. I mean,
Let's get Marshall yet, and then we've got to move on to the next one.
Another fun thing to do in the grocery store to try and keep your kids entertained also is if you give them a calculator and you do the comparative shopping on, like, if you get a bigger bottle of ketchup versus a smaller one, what's the better price? My youngest son really was surprised, plus mathematically it helps.
Mine has two cheat signs on there too. Yeah. But that's a good idea. Life application, right, for the skills they're learning in math. You help them to see how they put those skills to work in real life situations.
Okay, let's go on to the next one. Our next arrow is reward responsible behavior with freedom. I really feel strongly about this one.
When your child is responsible, the best gift that you can give them, especially when they're in the teen years, is give them the vote of confidence of saying, okay, now you have freedom to do such and such.
I think I've shared with you the example of what my parents did with me as far as driving. It's just, to me, it's unheard of, and I would never consider doing it for my children. I went away to high school, an hour and a half away from school, and when I got that license at 16, they gave me a car to live in the big city of Appleton, Wisconsin, when I was used to the farm. I had learned to drive when I was 12 years old. Our barn burned down the previous fall, and my dad was no longer able to afford a hired man, which he always had, to help with the farm chores. So at 12, I would have to get up and milk the cows, and then during the summertime, I would run the biggest equipment, because it's kind of complicated to explain, but I would run the biggest tractor and my father would run the smallest one when I was 12 years old. Well, by the time 4 summers had gone by, he was convinced he can handle his own means of transportation.
I never thought twice about it. Most of the other kids at my school lived with their parents, and some of them had cars to drive. Not all of them did. But when I think back on it today, I just think, my goodness, to give a 16-year-old a car and let them on their own for an entire week.
I would come home on weekends. They had it down to a T. I don't know how my mother and father ever learned parenting.
They certainly didn't learn it in school, because my dad went to school till he was 12 years old. And then it was work on the farm. But this was a principle that I seemed to notice with them again and again. And it was something that was almost a sixth sense for them.
I don't think they ever discussed these type of things. But when responsibility was shown, then it was rewarded with freedom.
You will be amazed at how responsible children can be if you get this principle down. Now, I've got a few other things to say underneath it. The more responsible your children prove themselves to be, the more freedom you should give them in accomplishing their tasks. The more irresponsibility they display, the more restrictive their environment needs to be. You see the principle that I'm laying down there? If your child is irresponsible, don't give them more freedom. That's a child crying out for restrictive behavior. They still need mom and dad. But if they are showing responsibility, then give them the freedom. And give them the freedom in accomplishing that task. Say, okay, the house needs to be cleaned on a regular basis. I'm not going to say anything about it anymore, but it needs to be done by Friday. And you'll be able to set up a system where you gradually wean them off of the reminders and everything so that they handle it. It starts maybe with their own room, like we've talked about in one of our early sessions, right? But whatever it is, when they show responsibility, then give them freedom. When they show irresponsibility, freedoms are up. Privileges are curtailed. Okay? And the scripture I thought of in connection with that one is 1 Corinthians 4, verse 2. Now, it is required that those who have been given a trust must prove faithful. This is what God is looking for from his disciples. Remember again, we're talking about disciplines related to disciples. He's looking for faithfulness. He's not looking for how successful you are, how many people you bring to faith through your witnessing. He's just saying, witness faithfully. That's the context of this particular passage.
Gordon, that passage brings it up in sort of an interesting, or brings up sort of an interesting chicken versus egg.
Yeah, which is
her concept. And, you know, we've always viewed this responsibility, privileges, and freedoms kind of iterative process.
True.
And give some more freedom, and if they blow it, you say, well, okay, maybe that was too early. Mm-hmm. And that's a constant struggle.
Yes.
And the child is always struggling to want more freedom and want more responsibility. And so, back to communication.
I liked your word iterative. I don't know if everybody understood it, but that means to do it again and again. There has to be a process with this, right? Where you give responsibility and then freedoms are given. And then you give responsibility and privileges go with it. And responsibility and privilege. You keep tying the two together. Right? Jenny?
One talk I've had to have with Morgan a couple of times is she's thinking now that as she gets the daughter's age, that she's going to have all this freedom. Mm. And I told her it will never be as free for you as it is for Gunner, because he is a guy and you are a girl. Gunner can put a backpack on, drive up 88 and go for a hike in the mountains. You can't do that. Because all it takes is some freak walking down the same trail. And that's it. And it's a hard reality, but I said, I grew up with it, mm-hmm. Grandma grew up with it. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And I don't like it, but
yeah.
It's sad, but that's just how it is. But they need to know that.
Yeah.
You know, you'll go off to college at midnight, you think, I'm going to go for a job, and you're a girl?
Yeah.
No, because girls have done it.
No.
They never came home.
No, that's for sure. I think it would be important that, in that case, though, to not make a girl feel that she has certain, weaknesses, or that she doesn't, she's never going to be as free as her brother is. I mean, it's important to work into a talk like that what some of the blessings are that come with being a girl that a boy does not enjoy. And just off the cuff today, I'm not thinking real clearly, I don't know what those would be, but it's very important to emphasize the blessing of the feminine qualities too.
Well, the blessings that a female can have are things like the sensitivity, the caring, the compassion, the mothering, the ability that's innate.
Yeah.
Versus a guy who kind of has to learn those things and tends to blunder through life, quite frankly, running into boundaries.
I think Jenny's talk, a very important thing to have with a talk with a girl who's Morgan's age, is to really get into the whole sex talk. About if you become pregnant, you are carrying a child that is attached to you for the rest of your life. Some guy, I mean, if he rapes you or if he's just a boyfriend who doesn't want to hang around, you know, he can much more easily shirk responsibility than you can. It just goes with the biology that you have. And it's important for you to understand this so that you can protect yourself.
And just more planning goes into it. If you want to go for a hike in the mountains, get a group of girls together, And I just thought, you just got to put, unfortunately, you got to put a little more thought into it. You know, just more planning goes into it. And you can have your freedom.
Yeah.
It'll just be in a group situation.
Well, and God may have made us in that way too. Don't girls tend to be more chummy at that age than boys are anyway? You know, it's probably part of the way they're made. Yeah. I think Rita had a point here.
I was, you know, she came back with part of the groups, and also taking a self-defense class. I mean, you don't make yourself vulnerable in the situations. You equip yourself with, if it comes up, how do you handle it?
Exactly.
Sorry.
And it goes right back to our theme for today, right? It takes discipline to become a disciple, right? That's a discipline to take a self-defense class, right? So that you are safe. And your parents are saying to you lovingly, you are getting out of the nest now. And I want you to be able to fend for yourself. I admire you, you're showing responsibility, and I'm about to turn over this important issue of your safety to you. You know, so impress on your girl what stage of life she's going through.
Deborah and one of her volleyball teammates at college would go out running together early in the morning or afternoon or whatever, depending on class schedules. One thing was the girls who were playing the sports on the volleyball team, anybody who hasn't seen college level, even some of the high school gals play volleyball, needs to go watch. They are strong, aggressive,
yes,
powerful,
great.
And so I was, you know, worried a little, but at the same time, I thought, well, if some poor schmuck tries to catch them, number one, they're running track, everything else, and playing volleyball, probably couldn't catch them, number one, and if they saw him coming, they'd probably pummel the poor guy to death, you know, so be strong and do the self-defense thing, and
Excellent point. Okay, can we go on to our last... we have two. The second last arrow says, don't make excuses for your children's bad behavior. I really think... Now, I'm not trying to be funny or anything like this, but I really think this is one of the biggest problems that parents have today. As soon as their child does something wrong, they're there to step in and say, well, what you really meant to say was... And it doesn't teach children self-discipline. When they step into it, they need to learn how to step out of it gracefully, right? Don't make excuses for children's bad behavior. I think I've shared it in the sermon. I've shared it in several of my Bible classes, I believe. I had a cousin who his parents would make excuses for him every step along the way. And it started with... I think it was obscene phone calls. Well, it probably started with dirty jokes or something like that. And then obscene phone calls. And there was always some excuse as to why some of the ladies in the town who were afraid of what was happening because of these obscene phone calls got a tap put on their phone, and that was not admissible in court to use. And my uncle and aunt tried to cover it up. They covered, till he finally ended up in prison on attempted first-degree murder. I won't go into all the gory details of it, but it was a syndrome where they made excuse after excuse, and he evidently had a problem in that particular area, and they only compounded the problem every time it happened. Do not make excuses for your children's bad behavior. Let them deal with the consequences of that bad behavior.
And the thing I'd like to emphasize in this section, I don't have a particular passage here, but I really think it's important to teach children the repentance process. I think depending on the age of the child, they are not able to take all three of these steps right away. I would identify these three steps: recognizing one's guilt. That must be the first step that you work on with your child. Maddie has a bad habit right now that we're trying to break, where there is, it's somebody else's fault, no matter what happens. And it tends to be mom and my fault when something doesn't get accomplished, like her memory work doesn't get learned, or whatever it is. She is struggling with this stage right now, recognizing and admitting her own guilt. Second one, this, and I think it's very important that your child verbalize each of these steps. The second step is asking for forgiveness. Whoever the person is needs to have an apology. And at first, that's probably going to require you as the parent insisting, you need to apologize to so-and-so. And you stand there until you hear the apology said. But eventually you want to let the strings go far enough that you simply say to the child, go back and apologize to that person. You're not in the presence of the child at the time. Maybe you check with the person later on, did she apologize to you? But it's very important to get that second step down of asking for forgiveness, where they can verbalize what they did wrong, and then eventually what you want to get them to do is do it all on their own, where they go to the person and say, I'm sorry that I did that. And then don't forget the third step in the repentance process, making restitution where applicable. Now, there are certain situations where the child isn't going to be able to do anything that makes up for the child that was hurt or the broken toy or whatever it happens to be. But in most cases, when children are very little, there is some natural consequence that the child needs to go through in order to process all of this information. Now, I emphasize these three steps because this is such an important life skill that we as Christians know we do this constantly, right? We do not go into St. Mark's Church without beginning our worship service this way, right? Well, there's a few orders of service that have no confession in it, but most of the time, we start out our worship by verbalizing to God, this is what I've done wrong this week. And then the liturgy is set up in such a wonderful way that there's a person up there, God's representative, who turns after confessing his sins toward the altar and says, by the command of Jesus, I forgive you your sins. Just the fact that the other person says, I forgive you, is important in processing the information for the child. That's why it's so important not to skip any of the steps when you're teaching children how to deal with bad things that they've done. There is this thing called guilt. It's invisible. And whether the 60s and 70s people tried to erase it completely and say, that's just an antiquated thing that your mother, because she's a little too strict, put on you. There is such a thing as guilt, whether we want to admit it or not. And the only way that it's properly taken care of is for me to confess what I've done and to be reassured by that other person. You are forgiven. I'm sorry, we only have about 3 minutes left, so I'm going to have to take us down to the final one. Don't rush to reassuring them of your forgiveness until they have processed in their minds what was wrong with their behavior and have demonstrated true sorrow over their wrongdoing. This is one that I would say, parents, again, you need to watch out for. It's very easy to step in there as soon as you see one little tear or something like that. Oh, you're sorry, aren't you? Well, now it'll be okay. No. Let them express that, right? Otherwise, you're robbing them of the chance to learn how to do it, right? And my final arrow for today is complement maturity. I wanted to end today with a positive one. I am very much a believer in talking to children about mature things. I've given the advice to several of you fathers that I know are in here to talk to your son when his voice changes and say, hey, that's kind of cool. Or the first time they have to shave. Or whatever, these physical appearances of maturity. Talk about that. I think too many of our children, especially our boys, grow up feeling embarrassed because certain things are changing on their body. Girls too, when there's nothing wrong with maturing, right? But we get kind of nervous about it. So talk to them about these things. And especially in this one, I'm thinking more about when they show mature behavior. Say, hey, you are really starting to grow up. I was really impressed with the way that you handled your friend the other day. You are showing that you have what it takes, and let me give you some freedom. You see what I was saying earlier about giving freedom because of responsibility? Compliment. You don't have to give a reward for this. You as a parent simply saying it is going to be reward enough. As they get older, don't reward anymore. Compliment. Okay? And I chose a passage there
Oh, first let me read that little statement underneath here. Compliment your children when they show maturity in a way that says, I am confident that you are mature. Isn't that really what children want to hear? My mom really, she trusts me. She's going to let me stay home. I think I shared with you, we had our first Sam Stays Home Alone thing, where Dorcas had her out for to get something quick, and she took Maddie along, and he got to stay home for 15 minutes or whatever it was. But boy, that was a feather in his cap. You know, he got to stay home alone. And I wanted to quote one scripture from Proverbs 31:31. This is the wife of noble character. I don't know how familiar you are with that chapter of Proverbs, but ladies, read it once. I love that chapter. It describes what a Christian woman is like. And the final verse of it, I believe this is the final verse, is she's a very industrious woman that's described in this section. And it says, give her the reward she has earned, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. The city gate was where the elders of the city would gather back in Bible times. And it was the place where business was transacted, everything. This woman was an upstanding member of the community, and people spoke well of her. They spoke highly of her because she was so reliable in the things that she did. In the same way, when your children show themselves reliable, compliment them. Point out, you are mature. You can handle yourself now. Unfortunately for today, we don't have time to go to the where the rubber meets the road section. If you want to talk about either of those with me some other time, you are welcome. I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to lead you in this class. I've enjoyed it very much. I haven't taught a class quite like this yet, but it was a learning experience for me, and I really appreciate all the input that you gave in the class. So I hope you enjoyed it.